And that comes from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 7, verses 18 through 35. The disciples of John reported all these things to him. So John summoned two of his disciples and sent them to the Lord to ask, "Are you who is the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" When the men had come to him, they said, "John the Baptist sent us to you to ask, 'Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?'" Jesus had just then cured many people of diseases, plagues, and evil spirits, and given sight to many who were blind. And he answered, "Go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have good news brought to them. And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." When John's messengers had gone, Jesus began to speak to the crowds about John. "What did you go out in the wilderness to look at? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go to see? Someone dressed in soft robes? Look, those who put on fine clothing and live in luxury are in royal places or palaces. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes, I tell you, and more than a prophet. This is the one about whom it is written, 'See, I am sending my messenger ahead of you who will prepare your way before you.' I tell you, among those born of women, no one is greater than John, yet the least in the kingdom of God is greater than he." And all the people who heard this, including the tax collectors, acknowledged the justice of God because they had been baptized with John's baptism. But by refusing to be baptized by him, the Pharisees and the lawyers rejected God's purpose for themselves. "To what then will I compare the people of this generation, and what are they like? They're like children sitting in the marketplace and calling to one another, 'We played the flute for you, and you did not dance. We wailed, and you did not weep.' For John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine, and you say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Look, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' Nevertheless, wisdom is vindicated by all her children." The Gospel of our Lord. In the text for today, we hear John asking if Jesus is the one they have been waiting for, or if they're supposed to be waiting for another. So often in the Bible, I find that people ask questions that seem kind of funny. Like, "John, how can you not know that Jesus is the one if you baptized him, right?" It's just silliness. But if you go back to this particular gospel's earlier stories, it's Luke chapter 3, verses 19 and 20, we find out that Herod has put John in jail for trying to tell Herod the things that he had done wrong. I assume he was trying to get him to repent and be baptized, so it wasn't coming from a bad place, but Herod did not want to deal with it and just put him in jail. So then after we read that John is in jail in verse 20, verse 21 says, it starts to tell us about Jesus' baptism. It's kind of ambiguous about it too. It says, "When all the people were being baptized, Jesus was also baptized." Did John do the baptism? It doesn't say. Was John already in jail? Someone else did the baptism and the two never met? It's possible that even if John did baptize Jesus, that he wasn't aware of all the miraculous coming. I mean, we don't see the crowd's reaction to that dove coming down and the voice from heaven. And we don't know if John is still in jail when he sends his disciples to talk to Jesus. But you kind of assume that he's stuck somewhere if he's sending messengers to ask a question instead of going himself. He wasn't a fancy person that didn't do the work for himself. Now, other Gospels, for example, the Gospel of Matthew, say that John is in jail when he sends those disciples. And in the baptismal story of Matthew, John and Jesus have an exchange that tells us that John knows precisely that Jesus is the Messiah. And that makes that question that he asks later even more interesting. So with these different gospel accounts of how it all works, I wonder, is John's question one of truly not knowing the answer? Or is it a question of dejected despair? Are you the one? Tell me there's another. Think about it. Have you ever been so discouraged by life that you couldn't see the good happening right in front of you? Right now, my social media feeds, especially Facebook and Twitter, are just permeated with stories of injustice. There's good reason to share these stories because we cannot ignore the pain and suffering of others and pretend like nothing ever goes wrong. But man, it never ends. It's just one story after another. For example, this week at the University of Minnesota, a young Jewish man had his room broken into and someone drew swastikas and a concentration camp picture on a board in his room, broke into his room to do this. In New York City, on the subways, people wrote swastikas and nasty message about Jewish people there. Anti-Muslim sentiment is getting strong enough that a little over a week ago in Quebec, Canada, an anti-Muslim terrorist went into a mosque and killed 6 people and injured 8 others. There's a lot to lament. There's so much to fear. There's so many reasons for me to want to pull the shades and curl up in a ball and not engage with the world for days, weeks, maybe longer. When all of this discouraging news surrounds me, I find myself asking, where are you, God, and what are you doing in all of this? Sometimes I lose hope. I wonder if John lost hope too. In Luke 4:18, it says that Jesus was supposed to proclaim release to the captives and let the oppressed go free. And here John sits in prison thinking, well, doesn't seem like I'm free, or that the Jewish people are done being oppressed by the Roman Empire. John's question comes from such a dejected place in my mind. It feels very real. Are you it? Is this all we get? Jesus' answer to John's disciples is to look at what he has done. Listen to the stories of the miracles that people have seen. All these stories of miracles, even if you witness them with your own eyes, must seem kind of hollow when you're sitting in prison for a bogus reason and this Messiah isn't breaking you free. Do these wonderful miracles happening because of Jesus have any real effect on John right now? I've been thinking a lot about how John must feel in a situation. I think I identify with it a lot because today I know that God is at work. I know it. But it feels like bad news is just so plentiful. So I did some research, got out the old Google, and found an article that talked about a psychological study that relates positive experiences with negative ones. They said that negative experiences have more impact and effect on our minds than positive experiences. And it's not because we as humans are ungrateful and horrible and really, you know, mean and all that stuff, and that we only hang on to the ugly and let go of the positive. It's because negative experiences take a little bit more to process. They require more effort, generally. And they have higher emotional weight because they need to be dealt with differently. There's more processing to do in negative experiences. Usually it means that there's something for us to learn, and sometimes it's a painful lesson. Why what we did was wrong, or why what someone else did was wrong, and how to correct it, whether or not we need to be punished for it. Positive memories don't really require a lot of processing. And they aren't usually cemented as strongly because of it. It's a little bit of a bummer about our human wiring, but if you think about us being designed to survive, it makes sense that negative things stick more. It's how we learn to, you know, not touch hot things because it's going to burn ourselves. And it's how ancient people learned to stay away from the bigger animals with the sharp teeth. You could forget the positive stuff because it wasn't dangerous if it came up and surprised you. And this same research that I found on why we remember negative more than positive generally said that we need 5 times the number of positive experiences to carry the weight as 1 negative experience. 5 to 1. For every bad thing I see or hear, I need 5 positives to equal that weight in my mind. 5 to 1. It's so daunting. No wonder I want to crawl in a hole and hide. And the news isn't looking for positive stories either. They're not helping me much. Why is this? It's for the same reason. We don't remember the positive stories on the news or look at them with the same kind of weight as we do negative. It's kind of a consumerism thing. These negative stories are selling a lot better than the positive. I know I watched news and thought in South Dakota when my parents watch news and they have all these like happy, fun stories about cool things people are doing. I'm like, this isn't news. Like, it's just how we're wired. And that ratio of 5 to 1, ugh. Now, it was pointed out to me that I should bear in mind that this is an average. For some people, they might be maybe more positively wired than me, and it could be 4 to 1 or 3 to 1. There could be some of us who need an 8 to 1 ratio. And for some of us, it could change depending on the day and where we're at. So the likelihood for all of us, however positive we are in our daily lives, the likelihood for us is that we sit in jail in the story with John, having done what is right in God's eyes and feeling discouraged that the world is still such a mess. But Jesus reminds John through his disciples and reminds us in this text to look at what he is doing. Jesus is not a flashy Messiah with castles and fancy clothes. He's doing good in the miracles that help those that otherwise might have been ignored. And Jesus asks us, what did you expect to see? And I think that's maybe a good question for us to ask ourselves. What do we expect to see? No troubles, no financial stresses, no conflicts with family or coworkers. No hatred, no fighting, no greed, no fear, no poverty, no crime, and no war. If we follow God in the right way, shouldn't that be how it is? Shouldn't it happen naturally? Sadly, that's not quite how it works. The miracles of Jesus are impactful, but they might seem less than helpful to a man in prison waiting to be free. Miracles today might be small. They might seem small, but they're happening all around us. Positive bits of beauty showing through that reveal God at work through all of us. Thought it might be nice to give you a challenge this week, even if you only do it for one day. And promise me you aren't going to do this on a day when you're expecting bad news or if you're going through troubles in your life, because I think this should only be experimented with on an ordinary day. But on an ordinary day, pay attention to the number of bad news, negative things you see in your social media, on the radio, on TV, in the paper. Pay attention. And don't judge them, because when bad things happen, we can't ignore them. We can't ignore critique from others trying to help us grow, or bad news that a friend or loved one is going through. And we must not ignore things like poverty, homelessness, racism, hatred towards other religious groups, hatred toward the LGBTQ community. We can't ignore violence against anyone. We have to be aware of reality and what is happening around the world in order to be more effective to help make the positive things happen. But do notice the number of things that you are faced with. Keep track on your phone or in a notebook. Make those little tick marks, see how it adds up. Look at that number at the end of the day. I'm guessing it's a lot of weight to bear. And it can be easy to feel like John, discouraged, disheartened, in a prison of negativity and despair. waiting for another to come who might be flashier and more impactful than Jesus. More impactful is the wrong word. I just mean flashier. And on the same day that you track those negative things, I also want you to keep an eye out for those everyday miracles. Keep in mind, sometimes it's a positive thing for someone to listen to your pain or your troubles. So when you have those things occur, like, it's just such a gift for someone to listen to you without judgment, isn't it? And listening well is actually a lot of work. So when you share those stories or you listen to someone else with those stories, count those as a positive too, because that to me is God's work. I counted how many negative things I brought up in the beginning of my sermon, and it was 3, unless anyone's better at counting and found more for me. But I thought that I would do this exercise with you all today and give you 15 positive things that I also saw on my Facebook feed to counteract some of those 3 negative things that I saw. Now, these everyday miracles, they might not seem that impactful, but to me, it shows me how God is really active and working in this world, and it's the kind of thing that gives me hope to continue to go out and be that light of God for others. So number 1, that graffiti that I talked about in the New York subways, the anti-Jewish graffiti, a group of people were videoed and taken pictures of, very diverse group. There was all different races, genders, ages, all gathering on the subway, and there's a guy saying, "I'm pretty sure hand sanitizer gets rid of permanent marker," and this whole group of people cleaned it off to kind of erase the effect of this hate. I just thought that was really great for people to band together to stand up for others. Number 2, I see people everywhere marching for what they believe in and calling leaders and doing things to affect good change, and that has me excited because I love it when people are active. Number 3, there was a video of a man, or it could have been anybody, there was a video of a person dressed up in this giant fluffy bear costume. It looked like the Downy Snuggle Bear, running around a college campus, handing people flowers in miniature version of himself, and the laughter and the smiles were just delightful. And that one seems silly, but anyone who can take time out of their day to do something to make people laugh, they have a high place in my heart. Number 4, there's this video of this dog that has a butterfly on its head, and the butterfly is slowly opening and closing, and the dog is smiling, like literally showing its teeth smiling. That's just happy. I don't care who you are. Number 5, my best friend from seminary just had her baby, and they put the newborn pictures up on Facebook, and babies are just amazing. I love them. Number 6, another friend of mine was at Feed My Starving Children with her church group yesterday, I think it was, and her group, the whole group that they were together with, packed 160,000 meals to help people that are in really dire straits, and that's amazing. There was a video of a young girl sitting with her dog, watching the movie Secret Life of Pets, and both of them are equally focused on the movie and excited by it, and you just know that they are buds, and she has a lot of joy from this dog. Number 8 was, I got an invitation to the graduation of a student that I had mentored 4 years ago, so I get the gift of seeing her grow and become, you know, achieve her goals and emerging on adulthood. Number 9, my husband told me last night that there's a new name for those of us kind of left out by Generation X and Generation Y. It's those of us born from 77 to 84. We're kind of millennials and we're kind of Gen Xers and we're always left out. Our generation is actually named the Oregon Trail generation because of that game that they used to have on the Mac. And that is the coolest generation name. I don't care who you are. Plus, it gave me a group that I actually feel like I fit in with more than the other two. So that was good news for me. A friend of mine who had struggled with mental health issues and suicide ideation has gotten her life to a place where she feels joy and gratitude again and got this really beautiful tattoo to symbolize that she persisted. And you guys know how much I love tattoos that have good meaning, right? What do we have? 11. Yesterday, I found a drawing that someone had done here at church and left in a hymnal. It was delightful. It was a loaf of bread with like a platypus nose and tail, and they named it a breadipus. And whoever did this drawing needs to come find me because I want more of these because it's awesome. It's on my Facebook if you follow me. It's a really nice drawing. It's quality work. What else? A story about a disabled veteran who needed to have a service dog because of PTSD, and he couldn't find a job. And then the Lowe's where he lived decided that they would hire him and his dog. So then they have video of him working, and the dog has a Lowe's vest. It's great. It's so wonderful to see that we can accommodate people and meet them where they are and have them have jobs and be, you know, continue to be contributing. Number 13, Nadia Boltz Weber. If you don't know this by now, I'm a huge fan. She's working on another book, and I saw some research she was doing, and I'm so excited. Number 14, I saw two ordinations happening yesterday on Facebook feed, and I know today there's an installation of someone that you guys maybe remember from a few years ago. And number 15, there were two separate posts being spread around about how important education is, and how, and it made me very grateful for all the teachers in my life that have taught my children, have taught me. And there are so many more good things. I mean, several people celebrating birthdays, cute kid photos, because kids are always miracles. Bill Nye the Science Guy is bringing a new show to Netflix, which I am really pumped about because he always had so much fun and such great information on his shows. People are celebrating justice being done all over the world. God is at work. Maybe these things seem small by themselves, but put together, it's no small feat that all these good things are happening. And some people could be having hundreds of negatives in their day, troubled home life, financial strain, strained relationships, health issues. Even just being aware of the many things going on in the world can really be weighing on someone. And when you feel discouraged, it's very hard to feel like God is at work or to notice those things that God is doing. But God is always at work. And it's up to us to make sure we share that good news. Mr. Rogers is credited with saying this. When he was younger, he used to get very down and depressed about the bad things that would happen in the world. And his mother told him that when bad things happen, look for the helpers. That's God in action, those helpers right there. So let's challenge ourselves to look for those helpers and to be those helpers, to be God's love in action. Could you be one more positive thing in someone else's day? To help them to see the light and love of God a little bit better? Because miracles are happening all around us, everywhere. If only we could take a moment to open up our eyes and really see and hear what God is doing. It doesn't need to be big to be a miracle and a gift. So when you notice those everyday miracles, be sure that you share that good news of what God is doing. Help others to see the good and to see God.